From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Hello and welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Kim Lewis, and joining me on the panel this week are VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain and Moment magazine contributor Dan Revive. Welcome, Cindy and Dan.
Thank you.
Great to be with you, Kim.
Here are the issues. EU and NATO leaders met in Brussels to discuss bolstering Ukraine's air defenses after Moscow launched its most intense missile strikes since the start of the war. President Vladimir Putin ordered what he called retaliatory strikes for an explosion on a bridge last weekend. The explosion caused the partial collapse of Kerch Bridge, which connects Russia to the Crimean Peninsula, an apparent attack that struck both Russia's supply lines and a symbol of Russian power in the area. The external power supply at Ukraine's Zaporizhia nuclear power plant was cut for the second time in 5 days on Wednesday, according to International Atomic Energy Agency chief Rafael Grossi, who called it a, quote, deeply worrying development. Democratic lawmakers in the House and Senate are introducing legislation to suspend U.S. arms sales to Saudi Arabia after the kingdom sided with Russia to cut oil production at last week's OPEC Plus meeting. The International Monetary Fund, IMF, has once again downgraded its forecast for the global economy with a sharp warning that for many people, 2023 will feel like a recession. President Biden told the news organization CNN that the prospect of a, quote, slight recession, unquote, is possible, but that he doesn't anticipate it. The Congressional Committee investigating the January 6, 2021 riot at the U.S. Capitol held its final public hearing, with members pledging new revelations about former President Donald Trump's role in the effort to undo the 2020 presidential election. And the Justice Department urges the Supreme Court to reject Trump's request that it intervene in the dispute over classified documents seized from his Mar-a-Lago residence. Well, those are the issues. Let's get started. Well, Dan, NATO nations have committed to sending Ukraine billions of dollars in sophisticated Western weapons, including about $17 billion from the United States alone, after Moscow launched its most intense missile strike since the start of the war. So how committed are the EU and NATO nations to provide Ukraine with what it needs and for how long?
Surprisingly so, whether it's the United States or its allies in Europe, there have been so many statements, not just condemning Russia for attacking cities all over Ukraine, apparently, as you said, a retaliation for an explosion on a bridge that connects Crimea with Russia. Very symbolic. Putin was obviously angry about this. And President Putin then ordered that the Ukrainian cities, including the capital Kyiv, be struck. And that reaction by the Western countries, whether in the NATO alliance or the European Union, absolutely seemed united. Now, again, there are some voices and some columnists in newspapers in Europe, occasionally here in the United States, that say, when is this war going to end? That if Western countries keep giving more weapons to Ukraine, that keeps the war going. But the answer, whether from President Joe Biden or other Western government leaders, is that it's up to Russia. Russia should stop the war. Russia invaded Ukraine this past February. Tens of thousands of people have died, and yet it goes on. But I'm finding that the Western countries are willing to send more weapons, right now focused on air defense that in some way might stop some of these incoming missiles that are coming from Russia. But also there is certainly talk about more offensive weapons, including long-range, very precise artillery that the United States and its allies are providing to Ukraine so that the Ukrainian offensive, especially in the south, can continue to push back Russian troops. Certainly there's no sign this war is ending soon.
Right, Kim. And as Dan said, there has been outrage and condemnation from very many quarters about Russia striking Ukraine capital Kyiv and also targeting playgrounds targeting a pedestrian bicycle bridge in Kyiv, targeting once again residential apartment houses, people's homes, basically. And you had the top U.S. general, Joint Chiefs of Staff General Mark Milley, saying that these are indiscriminate and deliberate attacks on civilians, and that is a war crime. Basically using very strong language. And it would seem that, you know, with these attacks, and Putin has basically, and Russian officials have said as much, that this is in response to the bridge being exploded. And they don't seem to be centered on the main focus of the war in the south and the east, but more to punish Ukrainian civilians. And this is something that is, once again, really causing outrage. And you have Ukraine's president saying that basically Ukraine has only 10% of what it needs in terms of air defense. And you have U.S. and NATO officials now thinking about, as Dan said, what they can do to help Ukraine again. And you had one NATO official saying, look, in the long term, we're starting to produce more weapons and more of what Ukraine will need. In the long term, we are much better equipped to see this thing through than Russia is.
But how long can the war continue like this? Some people say it could for years and years. But on the other hand, President Putin has really shocked a lot of people in Western countries by reminding us that Russia has nuclear weapons, which of course it does and had for decades. And it used to be unthinkable that the United States or Russia or other countries that have nuclear weapons would use them. Putin has pointed out that the United States is the only country to have used the atomic bomb twice, ending World War II by attacking Japan, Hiroshima and Nagasaki. So that was the 1940s. But the use of nuclear weapons, unthinkable. The whole world could face Armageddon. Now, all of this is being talked about again because Putin officially says that four sections of southern Ukraine are now part of Russia. Putin has annexed that territory. And so he claims the Ukrainian government is attacking Russia itself, and therefore he might order the use of nuclear weapons. President Biden has said that the result could be catastrophic, and that Russia would face very harsh responses. But there's no one in NATO who's willing to say that NATO would or would not use nuclear weapons to respond. All of this actually is frightening a lot of ordinary citizens.
Absolutely. And another worrying development is that the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant in Ukraine, where power has been cut again, the loss of the external power supply forced the plant to once again rely on its emergency diesel generators for necessary safety and security operations, such as reactor cooling. So this is certainly a precarious situation. So does it appear that Russia wants a nuclear accident?
Well, I'm not sure about that, Kim, but it is concerning. And we do have the International Atomic Energy Agency chief Grossi shuttling back and forth between Kyiv and St. Petersburg, between Ukrainian and Russian officials, trying his best to establish a nuclear safety and security protection zone around the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, saying, look, this is not something that pertains to either side. This is for the safety, because, of course, any accident that would happen there could also affect Russia. It could affect other countries in Europe. So this is something that officials are doing their best to just try to get a safety zone around it. But we hear that Russian officials are working on, as they say, transforming it to Russian norms and having it under Russian control.
And also, momentum is building in Congress in support of legislation that would take on the OPEC Plus group of oil-producing nations that just announced cuts in production likely to help Russia and raise prices in the United States. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle have gone even further, saying that the decision by the Saudi-led group to reduce production by 2 million barrels a day is a reason to significantly shift relations with Riyadh. Also, Cindy, you've been covering this. What is the status of U.S. relations with Saudi Arabia now?
Well, Kim, I think it's hard to overstate just how angry President Biden, the White House, and a lot of members of Congress are at this unexpected move by the OPEC Plus cartel, and Saudi Arabia is a leading member and the most influential, to cut oil at this time where Europe is facing, you know, a winter of energy crisis, and we have this Russian invasion of Ukraine. And it was just seen as both a slap in the face to President Biden, who is just, you know, weeks ahead of midterm elections here. Biden is not on the ballot, but Democratic candidates are. And whether Republicans or Democrats control the House and the Senate is at stake. So this was felt as a slap in the face to Biden, who had gone to Saudi Arabia in July and had the famous fist bump with the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, and took a lot of criticism for that from human rights experts. And now to have this happen, and President Biden has said that when members of Congress come back after the elections in November, he will work with them very closely, and that there will be consequences for Saudi Arabia for this cut in the global oil supply at this crucial moment.
Well, as you said, Cindy, there also seem to be consequences in American politics with the midterm elections coming up November 8th, and already a big issue for a lot of American voters in deciding whom to vote for their member of Congress or their U.S. senator, is inflation, right? Prices going up. On Thursday, there was the monthly report from the U.S. government that said that consumer prices in the United States are now 8.2% higher than a year ago. And we know that in other countries, inflation is even worse than that. So if the OPEC plus countries, that's the traditional OPEC cartel plus Russia, will be pumping and producing less oil, well, the price of energy will only be higher. It's a big problem, well, for just about every family all over the world, but it's really felt in Western Europe. It's felt in the United States. So it's not only politics, but politics is part of it. As you said, it was clear in the American Congress, there's a lot of anger towards Saudi Arabia. But one other angle would be the nuclear talks with Iran, whether to renew the nuclear agreement from 2015 that then President Donald Trump walked away from, took the U.S. out of that nuclear deal in 2018. President Biden wanted to re-enter it, but, well, Cindy, you cover the State Department every day. State said the other day that Iran's demands are unrealistic, really making it seem like there's not going to be any renewal of the nuclear deal soon. And strangely enough, that could please Saudi Arabia. Oh, good, the U.S. isn't making a deal with Iran.
Yes, that's right, Dan. And talking about consequences for Saudi Arabia, and Democratic lawmakers are calling for a one-year stop on all U.S. arms sales to the kingdom. The State Department spokesperson Ned Price was asked about this and about the threat from Iran, and saying, yeah, we will definitely keep an eye on Iran and all this. And it is a complicated situation there in the Middle East with Saudi Arabia and Iran as rivals, and the U.S. is sort of walking a tightrope. Many are scratching their heads as to why Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who is now also officially prime minister, as to why he would take this action, so clearly siding with Russia, as most people view it at this time. And some members of Congress are saying he has miscalculated. He's miscalculated several times, including with the assassination of Jamal Khashoggi, and that this may really create a backlash. The Saudis spend a lot of money on public relations in the United States and elsewhere, and this could all go up in flames at something like this.
One other word about Iran. I know the State Department the other day said our focus now is not on the nuclear talks with Iran, but rather supporting as much as we can the courageous protesters in Iran, as those protests are continuing. And again, dozens of people have died. And well, the U.S., I think more clearly now, says it does support the protesters. And perhaps behind the scenes, the U.S. is doing even more than we know to help the protesters.
Very nice summary of this very complex topic. And thanks for bringing the Iran angle in and the Iranian protesters in. Well, it's time now for a quick break. And when we come back, we'll have more on the economy. Issues in the News is coming to you from the Voice of America in Washington. If you would like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voaafrica.com. While you're there, check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. Also visit us on Facebook and leave a comment or two. Then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel via Skype, VOA Senior Diplomatic Correspondent Cindy Sain and Moment Magazine contributor Dan Revive. Well, the International Monetary Fund, IMF, has once again downgraded its forecast for the global economy with a sharp warning that for many people, 2023 will feel like a recession. The IMF report says more than a third of the global economy will see two consecutive quarters of negative growth, while the three largest economies, the U.S., the European Union, and China, will continue to slow. So what is the best thing that people can do in this situation, and how are people reacting to this report?
Well, it's a difficult combination right now of high inflation, as we've been discussing here, on issues in the news so that consumer prices are going up. But at the same time, the experts are saying that we are entering a recession, might already be there. President Biden expressed a little bit of skepticism. He said he doesn't anticipate a recession, but if it happens, it would be a slight recession, so it might. Experts aren't sure sort of how bad will it be, whether in the United States or with America's trading partners. A lot of people forget that China has been such an important part of the global economy for several decades, and yet China has really slowed down, in part because of the COVID pandemic. So China's not a good customer right now buying Western goods, and China isn't producing as much as it produced. All of this is quite a combination of factors that I know a lot of Americans are wondering what's next. Should they save more money for a rainy day to get ready? Should they perhaps buy something now, like the car or a house, before the prices get even worse? And yet if they need to borrow money on a house, interest rates this year have gone up so much. In America, a typical mortgage at the start of the year was at an interest rate of about 3%. And now it's almost 7%, a very big change in the cost of housing.
Right. And I would agree with everything that Dan said and just say, of course, one other major factor is Russia's invasion of Ukraine, which is leading to a severe energy crisis in Europe. Of course, global inflation being a factor, and people in the U.S. are certainly feeling it. We had a World Bank leader saying that extreme poverty is on the rise again, and that 47% of the world's population are living in poverty on about $7 a day. So that really sort of brings it home. Some of us maybe are a little uncomfortable with higher prices, but others are really facing not knowing where their next meal is coming from.
Yes, those are very good points. And also the IMF chief said there would be a cost for the rest of the world if the U.S. fails to tackle inflation. And as you brought out earlier, Dan, inflation is still a hot topic with the midterm elections just around the corner.
And you know, Kim, it's fascinating. Opinion polls are finding that Democrats and Republicans see the big issues for the November 8th election very differently. Republicans are pointing to an upsurge in crime. The reports from the southern United States that a lot of illegal migrants are arriving through Mexico, and pointing a lot to inflation and blaming Biden's administration. Whereas Democrats are concerned about the state of democracy, whether Republicans are questioning the legitimacy of elections. I'm really just amazed how Americans get the same set of facts and yet divide into two major camps where they see things so differently.
Very good points. And we'll just have to see how this all plays out in just a few weeks ahead on November 8th. Another election issue coming up is the House January 6th Select Committee investigating the January 6th, 2021 riot at the U.S. Capitol. It held its final hearing with members pledging new revelations about former President Trump's role in the effort to undo the 2020 presidential election. So where does this topic stand with the American people, and what role could it play in the midterm elections?
Well, I think, Kim, that former President Donald Trump is playing a very outsized role, very untypical for a former U.S. president, in these elections. He is holding rallies, and in a recent one, he was bragging again about his crowd sizes, and he said the biggest and best crowd ever was on January 6th, which shows that he's more openly now embracing the violent siege of the Capitol in which several police officers were killed. The hearing, basically, they are summing up and focusing more and more on Trump's state of mind during those hours where we know that he sat in the White House watching on TV people with their flagpoles and bursting their way and beating Capitol police officers to get into the U.S. Capitol. And a very powerful spokesperson has been Republican Liz Cheney, who's been an effective voice. And she said that former President Trump summoned the mob, he assembled the mob, and he led the flame of this attack. So I think, as Dan said, especially for Democrats, and then I think also for many independents, this seems like a very real threat to democracy.
And even as the hearings seem to wind down, with the January 6th committee hinting that if they get even more information, perhaps we will hear more after the November elections, again, there's that divide. Basically, liberals, Democrats here in the United States, they watch the hearings, they listen carefully, they want more proof as they see it that President Trump and people close to him organized the violence at the Capitol in January of last year. Whereas conservatives, including some TV channels, a lot of websites and radio programs, say that the hearings are a total waste of time. They're just a so-called witch hunt against Donald Trump. And again, we have the divide. What does the majority think? Well, maybe in part the elections will show us. But this is just an issue that's still there. Something so unusual happened with crowds of people assaulting the Capitol building where Congress sits on the very day that Congress was going to officially confirm the presidential election result.
Yes, and also the Justice Department asked the Supreme Court to reject former President Trump's plea to intervene in his legal battle and allow the special master to review the classified documents seized at Mar-a-Lago. How long could this go on, and who benefits the most out of this type of procedural back and forth?
Well, the discovery in recent months that former President Trump had secret documents at his home in Palm Beach, Florida, Mar-a-Lago, was really quite a surprise. The U.S. government, now represented as the Biden administration, says that this apparently was a serious crime, that there were secret documents there. A lot of them had to do with foreign affairs, even with nuclear weapons around the world, that some of the agents of the CIA could be in danger. And yet again, supporters of Donald Trump say it's no big deal, and it was not right for the FBI to raid Mar-a-Lago. But I have to say, as a journalist, the big question that I have is, why did Donald Trump want these documents? Even as he speaks in public and he says through his lawyers he had a right to have those papers, he's not suggested at all why he wanted them. So there's this mystery as well as the legal issues. It's certainly not going to be resolved before the November 8th election, if that has any impact at all. But it could lead possibly to criminal indictments of Mr. Trump or other people, and that could affect the possibility of him running for president again in 2024.
Well, it's time now to find out what is weighing on the minds of our panelists. Cindy, what is weighing on your mind this week?
Well, somehow the images of people in Kyiv and across Ukraine, some who, you know, had a little bit of peace from having their homes bombed for some time now, just seeing that again and thinking that we're, you know, about to go into 9 months of this. And for me, just brought the human aspect of this again, that people are still fearing for their lives. They're still getting killed and injured. These attacks on civilians just seem so senseless. And you had German Chancellor Scholz, who's been criticized, if anything, for being a little bit too reticent, but him saying this Russian invasion is an attack on democratic countries, on our way of life, on democracy itself, and on the international rule of law. So that's kind of weighing on my mind this week.
I've been thinking about the COVID-19 pandemic because it's not over. And health authorities here in Washington are trying to tell Americans to be more careful than they've been and to get the latest vaccination, because now there's a vaccine that is tailored more for the variant of COVID-19 that's around right now. And yet the federal government tells us that far less than 10% of eligible adults in America have gotten that vaccination. People aren't interested or they don't believe in vaccines. Some people heard that the vaccine actually can hurt their health. And yet at the same time, I know I'm going to be going soon to an event at the beautiful Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts here in Washington. And yet the Kennedy Center is changing its rules. You don't have to wear a mask anymore when you're in the audience. You don't have to show your card to show that you've been vaccinated, as though the pandemic is over. So I'm somewhat concerned that it's not over.
Well, we will end the show on those thoughts. My thanks to our panelists, VOA Senior Diplomatic Correspondent Cindy Sain and Moment Magazine contributor Dan Rabib. I'm Kim Lewis, and thanks for joining us for Issues in the News.